This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
They are one of the largest recipients of NIH funding. Their scientists played a substantial role in developing more than half the cancer drugs approved by the FDA in the last 5 years. Dana-Farber Cancer Institute has been making one advanced cancer discovery after another for over 75 years. At Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, what we do here changes lives everywhere. Find out more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
A huge earthquake has rocked Turkey and Syria. Live from the BBC World Service, this is the Marketplace Morning Report. I'm Will Baim. More than 1,000 people have been killed and over 5,000 wounded after one of the most powerful earthquakes to hit the region in decades. Measuring 7.8 on the Richter scale, its epicenter was in the Turkish province of Gaziantep. These men described the situation in the city of Diyarbakir, further east.
There are people still trapped under rubble. I have a friend living in this apartment. His children were rescued from the top floor. We'll see what happened to those living on the ground floors. May God give us a speedy recovery.
I was sleeping when my wife suddenly woke me up. The quake was very severe, very scary. We were hearing sounds from all over the place. It took almost 2 minutes until the shaking stopped.
The quake was felt across the region, with hundreds also feared dead in war-torn Syria. And Ismail Al-Abdullah of the White Helmets organization there had a simple message to the world.
Many buildings in different cities and villages in northwest Syria collapsed, destroyed by this earthquake. Still now, many families now are under the rubble. Our team's trying to save them, but it's a very difficult task for us. We need help. We need the international community to do something to help us, to support us. Northwest Syria now, it's a disaster area. We need help.
Well, the White House has said this morning it will offer any support needed. Well, let's move away from Turkey now and check in on the numbers for the first time this week. Where the Hang Seng in Hong Kong closed down more than 2% as tensions between the US and China once again weigh on investors' minds in Asia. Elsewhere, more tech layoffs whilst you've been asleep, with Dell laying off 6,500 staff. That's 5% of its global workforce. Now, it's another week of strikes here in the UK, and today marks the biggest in the history of the health service as thousands of nurses and ambulance workers walk out over pay.
Enough is enough!
Yeah, it's all reminiscent of a notorious winter of strikes 40 years ago. But there are some key differences, as the BBC's economics correspondent Andy Verity explains.
Back in 1979, the talk was of a winter of discontent, a famous misquote from Shakespeare's Richard III. Now is the winter of discontent. And they leave out the next bit, which is actually, now is the winter of our discontent made glorious summer by Richard, son of York. It's actually a happy line. But back then it was misquoted to refer to the level of strikes that there were in 1979. The winter back then, very cold winter, even colder than now, snow drifts, etc., 78-79. And you had things like, famously, refuse collectors not picking up the rubbish in Leicester Square. You had strikes by road hauliers. A lot of discontent. But what's very different between the situation then and the situation now, when there are more strikes than we've seen in at least 10 years in the UK, the big difference is really that living standards are falling much faster now than they were then. So although you had double-digit inflation in the late 1970s, but the pay rises that are being offered now are very much smaller than those offered in the 1970s. In the 1970s, people's living standards still increased because although inflation was astronomical, so were their pay rises. Whereas now you have things like the Royal College of Nurses, which has never struck before, saying, you know, please come to the table, government. We're just asking for a little bit more. They've been offered something equivalent to 7% in Wales, and they've called off their strikes. So you can say with some confidence that if there were higher offers around from the government, then there would be fewer strikes. But the government says, well, that would be inflationary.
Right. So it's as simple as that, right? It's just, it's the numbers, and they're as far away as they've ever been on those numbers. What changes then? Or do we look like we're in for a real long haul here?
Well, what changes then? Does the government come under sufficient political pressure to come to the table and start talking? Do the unions feel under pressure from the public to call off the strikes because of the things that might go wrong now? For example, we've got ambulance workers on strike, and of course, that's going to cause problems. They similarly have been offered about 4.5%, and they're saying that's too little given that inflation's 10.5%. What could make things easier is signs that inflation is coming down. We've already seen a bit of a dip in inflation, nothing like what we've had in the United States, where inflation's now down below 7%. In the UK, it's still above 10%. Some of that because the weaker pound has meant that imports are more expensive, and some of that possibly because of Brexit. But in any case, if inflation did come down a little, then you can say that the pressure to have bigger pay rises would probably also reduce. But for now, we're kind of stuck in this loop where the government's not coming to talks and the union are saying, well, we'll have to go out on strike then, and never the twain shall meet.
Great grip on the numbers, better grip on the Shakespeare. The BBC's economics correspondent, Andy Verity, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
I often feel that you, our early edition listeners, deserve some sort of medal for valour given the time you get up every morning to be with us. If not that, then I hope you've got a coffee, a strong one ideally. And yet research here from the consumer website Which in the UK suggests that's more difficult than you'd think, with big brands often having a pretty wide range of caffeinated pop in your morning brew, as Katie Barnfield's been finding out.
So I'm on my way to buy a single espresso from three of the big coffee chains here in the UK, and we're going to have a little taste test and see if we can tell which one's the strongest.
Espresso.
I've got the coffees now, and I'm joined by Chris Warburton, who is a man who knows all about needing an early morning pick-me-up as a BBC Radio 5 Live breakfast presenter. Hello, Chris.
Sadly,
how are you?
True. Hello. Yes, I'm good.
So we've got one single espresso from Starbucks, mm-hmm. one from British institution Greggs,
yes, love it.
And one from Pret A Manger. So, Chris, have a little taste of these, see if you can tell which is stronger.
So, I'm going to say Pret the strongest, followed by Starbucks, and then Greggs.
Incorrect.
Okay.
So Pret A Manger, that is the strongest. That has 180 milligrams of caffeine in a single espresso. That is nearly six times what they have in the Starbucks one. Greggs comes in the middle, 75.
So Greggs comes in the middle. But so I was right that the Pret was by far the strongest. Six times more caffeine.
Six times, just under six times more caffeine. Some high street coffee brands in the UK have close to your maximum safe limit of caffeine in for a medium cappuccino. Do you think that should be something that brands should say?
In a sense, you'd think it would be a selling point, wouldn't you? We've got lovely coffee, and it's this strength of coffee.
And it's going to knock your socks off.
Strong.
So, Chris, is this information going to affect your morning brew buying? Or
Possibly not, because I'll probably forget which one. That's the problem, isn't it?
Just buy the one you like the taste of.
Buy the one you like the taste of. Well,
possibly so. Thank you, Chris. Thank you very much for joining me.
All right.
Chris Warburton there.
Thank you.
Yeah, hope your coffee knocks your socks off. Hope you slurp less than Chris Warburton, though. Thanks so much for listening to the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.